Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. This is the mandatory vendor conference for RFP 5000 for the Mississippi Department of Information Technology Services statewide telecommunications service contract. My name is Michelle Smith, and I am the technology consultant over the RFP to oversee the procurement of the evaluation and the development of this RFP. So the agenda for this meeting, we're going to do some introductions. I'm going to allow the telecommunications team to introduce themselves, and then we can go around the room. I know there's a lot of us, but this is being recorded to post to our website, and we will also post the slideshow as well. And just so we can have a record of everyone's attendance, we need to make sure everyone is signed in and that we have your name stated. After we do the introductions, we'll do a project overview, and the telecommunications team will do that. And then I will go over some procurement guidelines, then we will allow for questions and answers, and then have a wrap-up and provide you with some next steps. So I'm going to allow y'all to introduce yourselves first.
My name is Brian Norwood. I'm the Data Network Manager at ITS.
Roger. Okay. So do we all want to start maybe here and then just introduce say your name and what company you represent? Go back over here.
John Finelli, Hughes Network System. John Nace, Tele System.
So we do appreciate all of you being here today. I know that this, it may not have been a quick drive for a lot of you. I do want to make sure you're aware to sign in. If you respond, if someone tries to respond to the RFP, to a specific section of the RFP, and they did not attend this conference, of the four sections that it was required for you to attend, the conference, if you did not respond to that section, or if you did not come to the conference and you're trying to respond to a section and we don't have record of your attendance, then you will be disqualified. And I can go into that more later. We are going to allow for you to ask questions during this time, and I want to make sure that it's clear that any questions that are asked are not official written questions. So if you want something to be official, then you have to submit it in writing. And we can go into that more as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Brian so he can go over the RFP in detail.
So I've been told to both speed up and go slow. Because it's so late in the afternoon, so y'all decide which one you want and flag accordingly. So we started working last spring on this RFP. We tried to take what we had from RFP 4000, which is the existing telecommunication contract, build on that going forward. Last July, we started a group for the Network Advisory Council that included entities from all the logical entities around the state to work together to make sure that all the areas that would be purchasing off this contract, their feedback was, we got their feedback, and could incorporate that into the RFP. So with that in mind, we had three main goals that we were trying to accomplish. We want to maintain at a minimum the current level of service that we get from the incumbent provider. We don't want to take anything less than we have. There's no point in an RFP process to take a step back. We want to move forward. This is for the whole, this is everything for the state. We want to make sure we move forward. We want to tighten the rules to correct some inadequacies that exist in the current contract. Just some things that we think as a state, as a very large customer, should get preference where we currently don't. And want to provide the state with options going forward for high quality, reliable telecommunication services for the various entities in state government. IT in Mississippi is very decentralized. ITS exists. We have about 150 people. There are another 1,100 or so IT people in the various agencies. Then all the other entities, the IHOs, community colleges, they have their own IT people. So across the board, it's very decentralized. The various groups will be able to purchase off of this contract with ITS's approval. Those entities are the state agencies. However, ITS must place those orders. We're the customer of record by law, so we have to place those orders. You also have libraries, institutions of higher learning, community colleges, K-12 schools, and your city, county, and local governments. For this mandatory bidder conference, in order to reply to any of these four categories in the RFP, attendance today was mandatory. Category 1, voice and data network. Category 2, enterprise internet. Category 6, hosted voice over IP. Category 10, the mission network. So of these four categories, there's the local and state account team, and the general requirement sections are very similar across the board, and I'm sure if y'all have read this, trying to go to sleep at night, you've digested all that. So I'm going to hit the high points of what for those two sections are similar among the different categories, and then we'll drill down into the other categories.
And that's what I was saying, the four categories. If someone was going to respond to one of these four categories, they had to be here today. And if we get a proposal from someone that is trying to respond to one of those four categories and they weren't here, or we don't have record of their attendance, then they will be disqualified.
All right, so the first one we have is the local office in the Jackson metro area. That is only required for the voice and data network category and the mission category. So you see, I'm trying to point at the screen, y'all can't see it over there. You see the section number that it applies, and then the other ones are non-applicable. All contact with logical entities must be through the local account team. We've had some issues in the past where a vendor, a reseller, or another business unit would try to call a customer site and try to sell them services, even though they're serviced by our local account team, which then just confuses whoever answers the phone and causes problems as they try to place orders because they think they want more bandwidth or they think they want something that they can't have. So all contact to the entities must be through the local account team. Any entity wanting to purchase off this RFP must be pre-approved by ITS. That goes back to the list of logical entities that I showed on the last slide. So we'll give you a list of those pre-approved entities on contract award, and then if we miss somebody or somebody, there's a new entity that's created, we'll work with the vendors at that time to get them added. Implementation timeframes, that's something we've had some issues with recently where we want to just know exactly how long it's going to take to get a circuit or a service turned up. You know, if it's going to take 30 days to get a T1 installed, we want to know that. If it's going to take 90 days for a fiber-based circuit, we want to know that. So we're looking for some timelines that can be codified. Also, if a due date or the install date falls outside that agreed upon interval, then we have some language in there to deal with credits for that. So we'll make sure that there's some T teeth in the contract per se, so that, you know, we do our due diligence to get the order placed in time, and then the vendor can do their due diligence to get it installed properly. For the, we also want a statewide inclusive of all logical entities inventory of service purchased off the RFP. So ITS, we purchase, we place the orders for all state agencies, so we know what the state agencies have. However, we don't necessarily know what the community colleges order, or the IHLs, or the libraries. So we need, for the vendors that win the different categories, if we need a, at any point in time, we need a listing of services, you ought to keep an inventory, keep it provided to us, so we can go from there. We're also interested in a 24x7x365 network operation center. There's probably about 10 specs that relate to that, but it starts in these sections referenced here. Looking for, something breaks in the middle of the night, who do we call? We call the proactive monitoring, et cetera. And then if any vendor is awarded multiple categories of this RFP, you must provide a single point of contact for all services. We don't want to have to keep, if somebody wins four categories, we don't want to have four different contacts. We want to just have a single one. All right, so the first category we'll drill into is the voice and data network. Basically, it covers traditional voice services, your analog phone line, Centrex, ISDN, PRI, legacy voice systems, and then also the data network, which is our switched Ethernet, MPLS, and then SIP call paths over an MPLS circuit. This is a, I don't know how well you can see that. This is a diagram of the existing state network at a very high view. We have two data centers, one right next door here. That's our Eastwood data center. That's the primary data center for the state. And we also currently have what we call the secondary data center co-processing facility down at the Robert E. Lee building. Across the street from the Robert E. Lee building downtown is the Wolfolk building. Half of the network core lives in Robert E. Lee. Other half of the network core, other part of that side of the network core lives in Wolfolk. So we have two totally redundant switches, VSSs, routers, et cetera. Firewalls, IPSs, everything is redundant between here at Eastwood and then downtown. We have a fiber network that links those two locations together and also picks up the 38 state buildings or leased buildings that are close to that fiber ring. So that's our Capitol Complex facility, and ITS is responsible for that. We also provide internet to the state agencies, community colleges, and the mission network as well. So we have border firewalls here, IPSs, that front that commodity internet so that we can secure it as it comes back in. We also have our MPLS network. There are around 1,200 sites across the state from all the different agencies, DOH, Human Services, Public Safety, et cetera, where they feed back into the MPLS network. Those are various types. A large portion of them are frame relay T1s. We've got some fiber-based circuits. Used to have some DSL, but those are mostly dried up now. There are also some agency headquarters for the mental health sites that are on the MPLS network. So they've got Boswell mental health facility. They've got 8 or 10 remote sites. So the remote sites feed back into the Boswell site headquarters on MPLS. And then that feeds back into the state of our MPLS circuit. So we've got 2 1-gig MPLS circuits, one here and one at the Wolfolk Center, Wolfolk building, to get that connectivity back into the MPLS cloud. First, for the data network, we have a requirement for all the data circuits. So in the first section of this, of the technical specifications, these specs cover all circuit types that we talk about later on. We're looking for a tool set for circuit statistics. We're looking for things like utilization, top talkers, those type of things. Really, what options do you have for your tool set? Just let us know what the options are, any prices that are associated with that. Currently, our wide area network is made up of managed services, so the vendor owns, maintains the device at the end site. So of our 1,200 remote sites, there's a router of some flavor that lives there. The vendor maintains that, and if we need any changes made to that, there's a MACD process that we work through. So the vendor owns, maintains the equipment. As those devices go into life, they must be replaced. We have a specification or a requirement in our enterprise security policy that once a device is can no longer receive software patches from the manufacturer, has to come off the network. So that's the point in their life cycle that we're talking about. We also have read-only access for troubleshooting. So if there's a problem that comes in, our engineers can log in those boxes, do simple show commands, things like that, just to get an idea of what the problem is, so that we don't have to engage the vendor every time that somebody's complaining about something being slow or they're seeing errors, et cetera. We also want syslog information forwarded to a server for the state. Now, we want this information to be segmented logically, so we don't want the syslog from the state network, the state agency devices, to be seen by the libraries and vice versa. We don't need to know what they're doing, we need that segmentation to occur. No out-of-band management allowed, and what we mean by that is we don't want any modems hooked to these routers that would provide a potential back door where somebody could dial into the modem and attack the router if these flaws exist. Audit requirements, the various entities of the state are under various different types of federal audits, HIPAA, PCI, IRS 1075. It's from time to time those audits, and it's way more often than we would like it to be. They come in, they'll perform audits. We may have to engage the vendor to say, well, they want us to run, you know, this show command on this box, and y'all have to work with us to provide that. If there are any findings as a result of the audit, then those must be, you must help clean those up as well to get us back in compliance. Some entities want encryption from end to end. So let's say we've got a managed router for a DPS site, they may want to encrypt that traffic back into their core. So have to help us work with us to set up those encryption tunnels. At certain locations, the techs that go out to work must have background checks, including fingerprinting. That's mostly for the public safety sites. So just be aware that that'll be required for any techs that go out to those locations. We're also not going to allow special construction charges with this RFP. We expect those rates to be included in the monthly pricing we pay. The exception for that would be for redundant circuits. Let's say we want two circuits at a location because the state thinks that location is that important, then the circuit has to be up 100% of the time. There may be redundant circuits in that case, or it may be that we look at a wireless backup type solution, something like that. But special construction would be allowed for redundant circuits. Also would not allow inter-facility charges for circuits as well. From time to time, we require out-of-state circuits. Let's say Department of Transportation is doing a traffic project and they need a circuit in Arkansas on the other side of a bridge. That'll be just on the other side in a different ladder in another territory. Those come up from time to time, so just wanted you to be aware of those. Ethernet dedicated to multi-point switch services. So we're looking for point-to-point, point-to-multi-point, and multi-point to multi-point switched Ethernet. Speeds from 1 meg to 100 gig. We're also looking for any options for software-defined networking. Preferably, we'd be able to just turn up bandwidth, log into an online portal, change bandwidth, change class of service settings, change the queue sizes, et cetera. And then here are the SLAs. We currently have seven different levels of switched Ethernet on our contract. We're looking for the five we use the most. So these are the SLAs that we're looking out, breaking out, would like y'all to respond with. MPLS, we are looking for an MPLS network because that's what the majority of our sites are now, the vast majority, with speeds from 1 meg to 10 gig. We're also interested in alternate transport options, LTE, DSL, satellite, whatever you've got, just propose it because there may be a need for it. Currently, the state does prefer wired over wireless connections just from a perspective of we want to make sure we get the bandwidth we pay for, make sure it gets there. It just seems to be more reliable. As this contract goes on, 5-8 years from now, it may be that wireless is in a better place where it can fit 99% of our needs. We just don't know, but we just want those options going forward. Also, software-defined networking options, like I mentioned earlier, changing bandwidth, quality of service, et cetera. Here's our SLAs for our MPLS circuits. You can see those there. We also need internet access from our MPLS provider, so the MPLS attached internet access. We currently have 5 gigabit a second of that across the state. ITS only gets 300 or so megs, which we use mostly for guest wireless, but some places like the libraries, they use primarily this because of the filtering and the content filtering and firewalling. We currently get about 300 public IP addresses from our provider, so we need to make sure that we at least get that many going forward. Hosted firewall and content filtering, they are big things for libraries and schools that use them. Since these are a per logical entity decision on whether or not they want to use them, we want to make sure that these rule sets can vary by entity. So a library may have one rule set, school districts may have multiple rule sets, need to be able to segment that. We want an online portal for changing those changes. Ideally, we'd have options for implementing them real time or scheduling those changes after hours. And we'll also need read-only access for audit purposes. Again, as auditors come through, we have to deal with it. Also looking for distributed denial of service protection for this MPLS attached internet, just because, you know, bad people like to do things sometimes to make our life difficult. We're also looking for SIP trunking, so concurrent call paths for the MPLS circuits, because if we're going to have a circuit there, there's no point in adding another circuit just to bring in SIP trunks. So we want that option for MPLS as well. Currently, the state has an Avaya Enterprise PBX that serves the Capitol Complex area. and then 120 or so locations around the state. So we're looking to replace the PRIs that power, that feed those with SIP trunks in the near future. We need those SIP trunks to be manufacturer agnostic. We've got several different, some agencies already have equipment in place that do that. We need to make sure that there's no issues with different manufacturers. And E91 compliance will be mandatory. For the voice network, we use trunking of various types in the Capitol Complex and around the state. ISDN, PRI, Centrex, analog lines. Some places around the state, their entire phone service will be based on Centrex. All the phones on the desk are Centrex. We've got that for some universities. As time goes on, that may change out, but right now that's what we're dealing with. We have a spec. The state will not bear responsibility for fraudulent calls, so be aware of that one. And also, E91 compliance is mandatory. For this category, the cost evaluation is going to be broken out by the inventory of what we currently have. So we're going to take the inventory we've got now. Y'all are going to price that, and we compare that for evaluation. There are tabs in the spreadsheets for switched Ethernet inventory and MPLS that have every site and the circuit speed at that location. For the voice network, we just rolled those up into, you know, X hundred Centrex lines. And then we're also going to take conversion costs into account. So if we have to have duplicate backbone circuits while a conversion takes place, we'll have to take those accounts, take those costs into account. Enterprise Internet, we're looking for a tier one provider because that's what we currently have, and we believe that's what the state deserves. If it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't want to have to call a vendor so they can call their vendor, so they can call their vendor so we can get back to who we want to. We want to get to the source of the problem as quick as we can because I want to go back to bed. We currently have two use cases that are used across the state. For this, one is the state agency enterprise network. So currently we have 14 gig access circuits that two come into our data center here, two come into the Wolf Oak building. On that 40 gig of access, we currently have 16.5 gigs of committed information rate. So there's 2x2 gig for the state agencies, and then there is 5 gigs for community colleges and 6.5 gigs for the mission network. And that changes, that grows every so often. Universities usually go up around 20 or 25% a year. Community colleges, they went up greatly recently because they went to 5 gig. The other use case we have is individual entity connectivity. That is, let's say a school district's got a 500 meg enterprise internet circuit. It goes there, and then they use whatever circuit or their own private fiber to get it to their different schools or their different buildings. So that's the secondary use case there. Currently, we have over 16,000 public IP addresses used for physical servers as well as NAT. So we just need to keep that in mind. We need a very large IP pool going forward. We're interested in utilization statistics, again, segmented by logical entity so that it can be broken out as we need to. Then looking for peak and average, 24/7, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 business days, that type of thing. SIP trunking, the same rules apply for that were on the MPLS circuits, manufacturer agnostic, E911 compliance, et cetera. Looking for managed services, again, the same rules I mentioned earlier apply. You know, equipment's owned by the manufacturer, by the vendor, et cetera. Hosted firewall and filtering. This is a little different because those can be on-premises options versus cloud-based. So we're asking specifically what you're proposing, and then if it's cloud-based, it must support different rule sets based on the different logical entities. Denial of service protection. This is a big thing over our enterprise internet circuits because a lot of times people get bored and want to send us 30 or 40 gig of traffic to attack a dorm room on campus because somebody died in a video game. We want to make sure that we get that option. SLAs, again, here they are. No special construction except for redundant circuits, just like we had in the data section. And then no interest facility charges. Cost evaluation for this category is going to be the same way where we've got the inventory. You've got an inventory on the, there's a tab on the spreadsheet that has every circuit we currently have and the bandwidth for that. And then also conversion costs will come into play just like it is in the data section. Hosted voice over IP. Currently, we've got this service on our current contract, but it's kind of in a limited use at this point. Part of that goes back to the decentralized nature of IT, like I was speaking to earlier. We've got a lot of agency lands out there that aren't necessarily ready for voice over IP due to outdated technology, et cetera. So going forward, as equipment gets better and the service improves, we see this being probably replacing and playing a big part in the remote offices to replace existing Centrex and business lines. We're looking for various options here, looking just basically propose options. We'll look at them, looking for cloud-based or on-premises solutions. We are interested in telephone number portability. so that we don't change existing phone numbers, because I don't want to tell the governor he's got to change his phone number. Interested in several options, features, looking for a basic station that would just provide dial tone, forwarding, call waiting, etc. Looking for call center type lines that do various routing options, skill-based, whisper coaching, etc. And then any other options, unified communications, presence, mobility, you know, voicemail to email, those type of options. Mandatory E-911 compliance, again here. Looking for options for anything that would help, could leverage the state's existing Avaya PBX. We don't know if there are any, but just throwing that out there. And also we need the voice traffic encrypted. We currently have, due to IRS regulations, we have to encrypt the Department of Revenue's traffic, and that will probably become a larger thing as we go forward. We are interested in a Mississippi government-only infrastructure. One of the problems we have now with our existing service is that due to a ruling by our security division, you have to have a separate switching infrastructure, separate cabling to support that, to support our current hosted VoIP provider. So we want to make sure that it's Mississippi government-only to hopefully alleviate some of those concerns. We're looking for survivability. Let's say the data circuit gets cut because somebody's running a backhoe in one afternoon. Currently, for our Avaya systems, we have gateways there that have a couple of Centrax lines in there for survivability. So what are the options for that? Equipment pricing, one-time, monthly rentals, lease purchase, what are the options? Just let us know what they are. Administration, we're looking for a web-based portal for your typical moves, ads, change, and disconnects. Preferably, there would be a process so we could do batch uploading to do large provisioning in batches. And we're looking for decentralized options. Again, with state IT, it may be that ITS is an umbrella for state agencies, and we may want to grant certain roles and certain rights for the agencies to do their, some of their own stuff, name changes, feature changes, as long as it doesn't affect the cost, look at something like that. So decentralized options for supporting the various organizational units. We're asking for SLAs, what you'll provide. Cost evaluation, we give you an inventory of what's currently in use. It's small at this point, but it'll grow. Then also conversion costs. Category 10 is the Mission Network. This is the Mississippi Optical Network. It was established in 2010, and it supports our four research universities, Jackson State, Mississippi State, University of Mississippi, including University of Mississippi Medical Center and the University of Southern Mississippi, as well as Erdick and Stennis as adjuncts for those universities. It's currently funded by an annual tax credit. That tax credit expires June 30th of next year. There was legislation put forth in the session. This time it died. We don't know what's going to happen next time, so future funding is to be determined. It may be a tax credit, it may be an appropriation, it may be the universities paying it themselves. We don't know at this point. This is a diagram of the Mission Network. Currently, the Mission cores live in the ITS data centers. One lives here, one lives in the Wolf Oak building, connected between the two by our fiber ring, and then each of the entities have two 10-gig managed wave circuits going to them. We also have two 10-gig managed wave connections that go to the Internet 2 POP here in Jackson. And then we provide them Internet 1 commodity traffic through our internet pipes. With this RFP, the key missions the IHLs want to achieve is for the Mission Core. Currently, those are Nexus 7000 and ASR 9000 for the Core. They'll look at upgrade options to connect the regional IHLs being Mississippi Valley State, Alcorn, MUW, and Delta State. Upgrade it in general to support the higher bandwidth and non-blocking mode as a need arises, and then the option to evaluate a managed core versus a state-owned core to see what the prices look like on that. From a circuit perspective, they want to currently change the bandwidth for the connections to Internet 2, so the two circuits that go to Internet 2 to go from 2 by 10 gig to 2 by 100 gig so that the whole network has access to 100 gig that then can be broken up among them. Increase the bandwidth for each of the research IHLs from 2 by 10 gig to a minimum of 2 by 40 gig. Potentially future upgrades to 2 by 100 gigs are expected. And then add in the regionals vet speeds from 1 to 10 gig. Commodity internet, currently the commodity internet for Internet 1 access they receive from the state network. We want to move commodity internet access from the state network onto the Mission Core. And then continue with the primary access coming from a Tier 1 provider, but they want to have the option to have other providers for secondary connectivity in case something happens. Here's the sections in the category where this breaks out. The state-owned, the managed versus state-owned core. So state-owned core, the state would, or the universities would own it. They would manage it. A managed service would just be like we've talked about earlier. Vendor's going to own it. Vendor would be responsible for making changes, etc. On a managed core, would require that they would allow other commodity internet providers to connect. Just something to keep in mind. WAN connectivity, the current design is 10 gig everywhere. future designs would be 40 to 100 or 100 gig at the research universities, regionals added 1 to 10 gig, and then internet 2 access at 100 gig. Also asking for SLAs on that. Asking for commodity internet from a tier 1 provider. Those currently they consume 7.5 gig of internet. That just went up from 6 gig last year, so it will be growing every year. Cost evaluation, there's a tab that talks about we're pricing out what currently Mission has and what the future design is to compare those two. And then also conversion costs will play a factor.
Okay, now that y'all have heard what is required of these four sections, I'm going to go into the procurement specifics for the RFP. And so with your RFP response, we require one original and then 10 copies and one electronic searchable copy of the proposal. We require you to respond to the RFP document and then to each section that you want to. So it's not required that you respond to every section, just the ones that you desire, your company desires to respond to. So you have the section one of the RFP is the submission cover sheet, and that's just some basics about your company and a signature. The proposals exceptions, anything that you want to take exception to in the RFP has to be listed on this form. You have your response to the RFP questionnaire in section 6. The point-by-point response to just the RFP-specific section is section 7. The cost information submission is section 8, and those in the tabs on the spreadsheets must be submitted in Excel format. And then your references section is section 9, and then there are some mandatory requirements, and you are not allowed to take exception to any of the mandatory requirements, or you could be faced with elimination. Also included in the RFP that was published is a standard contract in Exhibit A. We do ask that vendors review this document and take any exception necessary, because if you are selected as a vendor, then we will take that contract draft and that will be what we use for negotiations. And so if you do not take exception to anything and we get to contract negotiations and you did not take exception, there's no way for us to negotiate. Well, we can negotiate, but we don't have to negotiate with you because you did not take exception in the RFP. Each section can and could be awarded individually. So it could be one contract, it could be 11. We don't know. The evaluation, the scoring of the RFP is in Section 7, Technical Specifications, Item 13, and it can go into more detail in the Attachment A for each separate category. Each category will be evaluated separately, and the scores that we as the evaluation team will give will be based on a 10-point scale for each requirement. We want to make sure that you are responding to all specifications in the RFP with either acknowledge, will comply, or agree, and then within the attachment A with A, E, or X. And I think A means that you will do it, E is the exception, and X is you cannot provide it or will not provide it. If a specification asks a question or requests any additional information, please be specific in your response. We do ask that if there's anything that sets you apart from other vendors, that you include that in the comments section on the attachment A or in your proposal response of the actual RFP itself. Please just give more details to set you apart from other vendors. So upcoming dates, the deadline for the vendor written questions is this Friday at 3 p.m. I will not accept any late questions. So that is the cutoff time, and we hope to have the responses to your questions published to our website by the close of business on September 6th. The proposal is due on Thursday, October 5th at 3 o'clock. Again, we do not accept late responses, so if your car breaks down and you're here at 3:01, we can't accept it. The proposed project implementation is January 1st of 2018. We hope to have a contract. We better have a contract signed by then, right? And then the anticipated project go live is June 30th of 2019. Some additional information to give to you, the vendor communication with the state. If you have any questions in the meantime or need to communicate with anybody, that is covered in Section 2 of the proposal submission requirements. Item 14, and pretty much that states all communication has to come through me. Do not try to contact anyone that works for the state because they will be directing you to me. So it's better just to come straight to me. I also want to remind you that the answers to questions asked in this vendor conference are not official until and unless submitted in writing, and we will obviously publish those to the ITS website. And our website is www.its.ms.gov, and I do encourage you to continue checking the website periodically because we do post amendments or anything in the meantime. And I don't know if y'all knew, but we have posted amendments since we published the RFP 2 weeks ago. So. So now we're going to open it up to questions for you all. I will go ahead and say that we will only be answering questions about the specific sections that the voice and data, hosted VoIP mission, and the enterprise internet sections, right? So we're only going to be answering questions for those sections because those were the only ones that the vendors were required to be here today. If you have questions about other sections, I encourage you to submit those before Friday, and we will get those answered. So does anybody have any questions? We're going to evaluate each section separately, and then we will award based on the specific section. So it will be 11 different sections of the RFP. And I mean, like I said, it could be one or it could be 11 different vendors. Information.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have a procurement vehicle after June 30th of 2019 when that contract expires. You'd have those 18 months from January 1st till June 30th of 2019.
To follow up on his question, would it be 1 or 11? Within each of the 11 sections, would it be unawarded?
With the exception of the residential internet section. The consumer internet, that section, I don't remember what number it is.
I don't either.
5. The consumer internet section will be a multi-award. It's going to be an EPO-like, so based on the different, make a list, kind of like an EPO we have currently. We have a vendor pool, and whenever somebody wants to get service for internet-only type access, they would then evaluate which, at the time of their needing services, which one would be best.
And when you're saying consumer,
right, consumer. We're looking at things like DSL, cable modems, satellite, that type of internet connectivity.
Yes. Question. When you said hosted VoIP and SIP requirements, would you entertain the use of NI-based last mile providers as opposed to private? Probably reach the vast majority of locations, but there's some gaps in, for instance, where we might have an NI provider that we partner with, where it still remains private on our network, mm-hmm. but it might be a different last mile provider. Is going to the site. That way we can provide an all-encompassing solution. So, for instance, all of those VoIP stations would be on our network, all on our switch. But, for instance, maybe the last mile would be at south for 99% of the sites. That's like the partner carrier, such as Comcast or some.
So you're talking about proposing circuits as well with your hosted voice? Because I think we left it open. You could propose it either way. But what we're looking for from the state agency perspective is the state already has a single circuit. We have an MPLS circuit at every remote site. So we would hope, and we will ideally, we would let that voice traffic ride over that same MPLS circuit to get back to your whatever your device is, your cloud.
Okay.
Yes?
I just want to make sure you clarify one thing. That will be one vendor per category with the exception of consumer internet.
Yes, sir.
Which is a possibility of multiple forms?
Yes, sir, that's correct. Okay. Yes, sir. The inventory is part of every spreadsheet, all the attachment A's, every one of those, there's a tab that has the inventory for the appropriate services. Yes, sir.
You mentioned gathering information about SD-WAN. Are you going to be awarding any SD-WAN circuits, or are you just gathering information?
We're really just looking what's available right now. Currently, we're planning on going back in with our MPLS circuits. Okay. Currently, we have a single circuit per location, and we consider that for an enterprise class solution. We don't want to have necessarily at this point a device that we manage that takes in multiple circuits, and that they have to have it every location. So we're looking for just options. Specifically, when we're talking about software defined networking, or what we envisioned was more about being able to turn up bandwidth, class of service, might make those changes, et cetera. Whatever else you've got, whatever options you have, propose those as well, though.
We'd like for that to be part of the contract.
I mean, this is an 8-year contract. We realize things will change a lot over 8 years, so we just want as much as we can. This is, the last one was 10 with two years. This is 8 years with two-year renewals as well. Yes, sir.
The list of the attendees here also be as part of the...
Yes, a list of the attendees will be posted on the website. This PowerPoint will also be on the website, and a recording of this vendor conference will also be on the website.
Awesome.
I don't know that. I know before the end of the week.
Yes, ma'am. The NPA NXX Rate Center.
Yeah.
Yes, Gary.
I want to remind everybody that the network for the circuit and I have folks who are 74.
I don't. Will your state of Mississippi E-rate information be on the RFP or where PIN numbers, that kind of thing? Yeah. But yeah, your guys' identification numbers. Get in contact with you. Okay.
Any more questions? All right, and so if you did not sign in, make sure you do before you leave. And that concludes our vendor conference. And I appreciate all of you for being here.
Thank you.